fish biologist with Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife in the Fish Science Division. And this afternoon I'm talking to you about the moving home range study of select native fishes in the Chehalis River Basin. This is I was the project lead on this. There was also my co-authors Neela Kendall and Alice Cropper, important contributors to this work as well. And this is work, unlike this morning's talk, this is work we completed from 2017 through 2019. So we're talking about some results as well, which is exciting. So similarly, the focus for all the research that I'm doing is really under the guise of this question, how does restoration impact native freshwater fishes? As I mentioned, the ASRP is a holistic look at all aquatic species and habitats. Those actions that are identified, though, are largely targeting salmon and steelhead, and that's because we understand those mechanisms better. And those relationships between restoration and changes to distribution of other native fishes are relatively poorly understood, which leads, again, to this data gap where restoration also has this positive influence on native freshwater fishes. So that brings me to the native freshwater fish research that we have been doing for the past several years, and we continue to do the species distribution occupancy, where we looked smaller scale, we looked at species distribution. The interim fish study back in 2015, there was a report produced for that. I talked this morning about the future work, the development of the multi-species occupancy model. We've looked also at habitat preferences, looking at microhabitat or the habitat preference of habitat suitability indices for native freshwater fishes. We have a report out on that. And then finally for today, what I'm going to be talking about is the movement patterns that we investigated over the past 2 years. And there is a report available for that as well. We don't have this published on the website yet, but we're working to do that over the next couple of months. But if you could reach out to any of the co-authors and we'll be happy to provide a copy of it. So that brings me to the objectives of the movement and home range study. And so we wanted to describe the movements in home ranges in mountain whitefish, describe the movements of Pacific lamprey, and I have photos associated with both of those, identify and describe relationships between flow, temperature, and fish movements. So why these species? So mountain whitefish are relatively long-lived salmonid. They live for up to 15 years. They have their entire, they have an entirely freshwater-like history. And they're a potential indicator species of ecosystem health. So because of their long-lived life history, their broad distribution, and they have displayed foraging site fidelity in other systems as well. So for this reason, they could be a potential indicator species for that ecosystem health. They also undergo complex migration patterns. So migrations to spawning, overwintering, and summer foraging habitats. And we manage them at WFW. They are sport fish. A salmonid, they're sport fish. You can go out and fish for them if you so desire. And they're a fall-winter spawner. And so they're spawning from September through December. Just to, for those of you who aren't as familiar with mountain whitefish, I have a short video. So you can also maybe wake us up after the break here. Hopefully it works. So this is a school of mountain whitefish that we were observing. The fish sort of centered is one of our tag individuals that we have for this study. And then you can see that fish schooling with other mountain whitefish. This is underwater camera work. I'm still working on the skills here, but you can see them. We're downstream, so they're behaving fairly normally here. They're forage, they're drift feeding, so you can see them dart out and try and capture some prey that's drifting downstream, and also flashing. They rub on the substrate sometimes. So this just gives you, and they're easily identifiable if you are snorkeling because they have these dorsal scales that are reflective, which is unique to mountain whitefish. So if they're schooling with suckers or something like that, you can pick them out if you have good visibility. Okay. So next up, Pacific lamprey was our other focal species. These are a culturally and historically significant species. Populations are known to be declining throughout their range. They are a species of greatest conservation need for that reason, and that's listed in the State Wildlife Action Plan. And they have an extremely unique life history. So they filter feed as larvae, burrow in the substrate for 4 to 7 years, this is very unique compared to the other fishes that I'm looking at and that are present in the Chehalis. They metamorphose to juveniles and they migrate to the ocean at this time, and then they have a parasitic adult life history, so they spend 1 to 2 years in the ocean before returning to freshwater, where they hold and spawn the spring and summer the following year. So they're holding also. We just heard the talk about spring chinook. When you think about Pacific lamprey out there too, holding. And so for this study, for the mountain whitefish tagging, we use radio telemetry. We capture whitefish over 2 seasons using electrofishing, snorkeling with modified hook and line. So we call that snishing, snorkel fishing. And so the top photo is a picture of surgically implanting a whitefish with a radio tag. And then in the bottom photo, this is one of the crew members snishing. And so they're snorkeling. So this is a benefit of doing scientific research. This is not a recreational thing that you can do. But you can see sort of the modified hook and line here. And then we can observe the whitefish. We can target the whitefish in this way so we get less bycatch. And it ended up being fairly effective. Well, actually much more effective than electrofishing. And then for Pacific lamprey, we also use radio telemetry. We captured them over 1 season using tube traps. There's a picture of a tube trap here, anchored to the bank. And so unlike the whitefish efforts, these were passive techniques. So we were putting these traps out into the river and hoping that Pacific lamprey would swim into them and hold, and then we would go grab them from the trap and then surgically implant them with radio tags. And so that's a picture of surgically implanting this adult Pacific lamprey with a radio tag. And then so in addition, so we put the tags in the fish, and then we have receivers that listen for the fish. And so there are 2 methods for this. We have fixed telemetry receivers and then mobile tracking. Fixed telemetry on the left, these are powered by solar. And you can see the our crew member downloading the data from the fixed telemetry receiver. And these are operating 24/7, so they're always listening. They provide a broad spatial scale for movements. So they're separated out throughout the river system. I'll show you a map of that in just a moment. And then the alternative way we track them was mobile tracking. So this provides a finer scale of movements, because we go out and we look for the fish, we're hiking through the rivers, we're floating down the rivers. And this is a picture of mobile tracking here on the right. And we also, we were doing this, as I said, from 2017 through 2019. So here is the map of our study area. And we focused on the Nuwakam River. People have talked about the Nuwakam already this morning. But again, we focused on the Nuwakam. We had a known distribution of mountain whitefish in this based on previous snorkel efforts that had been done. And it's also a focal a basin of interest for restoration. And so this was our focal basin. This is the location of our fixed telemetry receivers throughout the Nuwakam. So we had... also, I'll just orient you, for those of you who aren't familiar with the Nuwakam, there's the North Fork Nuwakam, the South Fork, Middle Fork. Select tributaries are shown here as well. This is the main stem Nuwakam River, and it flows into the Chehalis River. And so we had 6 telemetry receivers also on the main stem Chehalis, letting us know when the fish had left the system, left our study area. For our temperature data that we were analyzing, we put out temperature loggers. And so these are the locations of the temperature loggers throughout our study area. And then here are the locations where we tag mountain whitefish and lamprey. And I will point out, and also, this is the location of the USGS gauge, and that's where we gather our flow data for our analyses. So I'll get into the results now for mountain whitefish. We were able to tag 37 mountain whitefish. The total distance that they traveled was between 0.4 and 185 river kilometers. The range was between 0.3 and 49 river kilometers, and we did see a diversity of movement patterns. And so here we have the results from the movements that we detected. On the x-axis, you'll see range in river kilometer. On the y-axis, total distance traveled in river kilometers. And so generally, the more fish moved in terms of range, the more total distance. And just to back up, so total distance is a measure of upstream and downstream movements totally. And so the amount that they moved upstream plus the amount they moved downstream. That equates to the total distance. The range, however, is the uppermost river kilometer minus the lowermost river kilometer. So what was that area that they covered? So we're looking at a map of the two here. The more range that they covered, the more total distance in general that they traveled. But if we just separated out into categories, call these the locals. Their total distance was less than 18 river kilometers of the range of less than 10. This was about 22 fish. We do have one active local. This stands out a little bit. The total distance was 17.8 river kilometers over just a range of 3.4 river kilometers. So moving a lot over a small area. And then we have the movers. The total distance here between 12 and 60 river kilometers and a range between 12 and 40 river kilometers. This was about 12 fish. And finally, the explorers, where we had a total distance of over 90 river kilometers and a range over 25 river kilometers, up to 49. And this represented 3 fish. So we also found in our results that whitefish were moving between forks and into tributaries between rivers. So 14 of the fish that we tagged moved between tributaries and forks. And so they were moving from a tagging location you'll see here. All the tagging locations for whitefish were in the fork. So we had the South Fork as well as the North Fork. And the tagged fish that we tagged were moving between the South Fork into the main stem as well as into the North Fork and tributaries as well. So we also had two fish move outside the study area. So they were tagged and they moved down the Nuwakum and out into the Chehalis. And then we also had 5 fish that were detected in smaller tributaries in winter. So these were the 2 tributaries we detected mountain whitefish moving into and out of these tributaries in the winter months, Lost Creek and Kearney Creek. And so, interestingly enough, Lost Creek and Kearney Creek, so these are smaller tributaries. We weren't expecting to see mountain whitefish in Lost Creek, for example. It's considered a third order tributary, for those of you who are aware of the stream order classifications. And so it's not considered a commonly used habitat for mountain whitefish. And so here we saw whitefish using that. So we were expanding what we currently thought was the known distribution of whitefish. It also highlights that importance of connectivity. We're talking about connectivity a lot today. But for these species as well, and so not just for salmon and steelhead, but also for whitefish, we think about connectivity. It's important for these whitefish to be able to access these tributaries in order to fulfill their life history. And this is just a picture of Lost Creek. We're excited to find fish. Movements in mountain whitefish differed among seasons. We saw, as you'll remember, there are fall spawners, fall winter spawners, and so we saw more movements in fall and winter compared to spring and summer. And so that was to be expected based on that spawn timing. We also analyzed the movements, the relationship with flow and temperature using linear and logistic regressions. We found temperature to be the only significant relationship. So I'll talk about the results of that here. I'm also going to move a little quicker because I'm running out of time. But on the x-axis here, we have average weekly temperature in degrees Celsius. And then we have the log of weekly average total distance. And so total distance, we explained before, upstream and downstream movements added together. Overall, we saw that in colder temperatures, fish were moving more. And this is separated out by season. We could see that difference between seasons. So it's here, it's separated out by season. We saw a significant relationship in the wintertime. Fish move more in colder temperatures in winter. So take home, whitefish undergo larger movements at colder temperatures. And then moving on here, we wanted to look at the likelihood. We developed a likelihood, so looking at the probability of movements. We have a threshold of 0.5 river kilometers. Again, temperatures on the x-axis in degrees Celsius. And what we found that fish were more likely to move at colder temperatures as well. And so in wintertime in particular, fish were more likely to move at temperatures less than 6.5 degrees Celsius. In fall, fish were more likely to move at any temperature. And as I mentioned, reiterating, they're fall-winter spawners. So they're moving more in the fall, but they're also more likely to move in the wintertime when there's colder temperatures are occurring. So moving into the results for Pacific lamprey. As I mentioned, this is a passive trapping technique, and so unfortunately we weren't able to tag a lot of fish, but we tagged 12 fish successfully, 10 of which we had one or more movements detected. The total distance for Pacific lamprey ranged between 0.3 and 75 river kilometers with a range of 0.3 to 40 river kilometers. We saw 2 movement patterns within those 10 fish that moved more than once, and so we have the movers who were tagged and then proceeded upstream immediately. the holders who held too near to their tagging locations. That was a 50-50 split between the two. And we had fewer fish, but we did see some interesting movement patterns. So one fish moved 35 river kilometers upstream and returned downstream and out of the survey frame over 43 days. So again, that importance of connectivity highlighted there. And then one fish moved 15 river kilometers to Lucas Creek, a tributary to the North Fork, over just 11 days. And so a diversity of places where they were holding. Some fish held near to their tagging locations. We have a map here. So we tagged all the lamprey in the main stem Nuwakam River. Some fish held in the Nuwakam River, that's where they're holding. And then some fish, we saw one fish holding in Lucas Creek. So a diversity of holding locations. And then just to summarize in the last minute that I have here, we did see that diversity of movement patterns for mountain whitefish. We saw that tributary use, and we believe this is post-spawning refuge, and so they're spawning at a time when we see higher flows possible, and so they're moving into these tributaries during November, December, during periods of high flow, potentially seeking post-spawning refuge. Fish move more in fall and winter. Again, that highlights the importance of connectivity during those seasons. We had an increased movement with decreased temperature, and they're more likely to move in winter when temperatures were less than 6.5 degrees Celsius. And we often found them during our recon snorkels when we were looking for mountain whitefish to do our snitching activities. We often found them in pools with spring chinook, and we know that the Nuwakam is one of the prominent basins for spring chinook in the Chehalis. And so restoration actions for mountain whitefish would be actions aimed at decreasing temperatures. So increasing riparian buffers for stream shading, adding large wood for stream habitat complexity, encouraging hyperreef flow, protecting those cold water inputs, those groundwater seeps, springs, and hyperreef flow, as I mentioned. And this aligns with the spring chinook restoration efforts that are outlined in the ASRP. So actions that are targeting spring chinook would likely also benefit mountain whitefish. And then the Pacific lamprey conclusions, we did see those two movement patterns, those diverse holding locations, tributary holding locations, as well as main stem holding locations. And so it's important to think about their access and connectivity to those holding locations, because like spring chinook, they're holding for a long period of time in the river. And then finally, I want to acknowledge all the folks who helped collect this data. It was a long 2 years, and it was important to have all this help. Very important to have all this help, and as well as land access and funding from the Washington State Legislature. Thank you.